This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 166. The date is the 12th of November and it's just around 6:30 in the UK. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me on X at Conkers3. And today, as always, I'm with my brilliant co-host, Henry Viola Hare. You can find him at HD Viola on X and also on Blue Sky and also on LinkedIn. Henry, how are you doing, sir, with your red braces on? Are you trying to emulate Mr. Urquhart Stewart with your red braces? Is it red or is it brown?
It is red. It is red.
Right.
Well, it's a funny story with these. So I signed up with a personal trainer back in the summer, and he's actually been so successful in helping me lose inches off my waistline. None of my trousers actually fit now. So rather than getting rid of them all, I've just taken to wearing braces to keep them up.
That's an interesting reason, mate. You can't just get them tailored again, you know, and get them to take the waist in.
I can, but I quite like the look of the braces. They've grown on.
Right, fair enough. Fair enough, mate, fair enough. Oh, dear. Other than the new look with the braces, mate, any news you want to share with us regarding your travels? I know you were, you know, you've been busy with all kinds of stuff.
Well, there's been lots of wheeling and dealing. The office has been terrifically busy. You know, we've got some changes incoming imminently, which I'm hoping to share with the audience. All good news for yours truly. And to be honest with you, it's just been sort of head down and getting on with things as we head into the end of the year. The markets have been quite kind. I've not had any major blow-ups in the portfolio, thankfully. So touch wood, we don't get any between now and the end of the year. And I'm waiting with bated breath for the budget at the end of this month.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are waiting for that. I don't know whether to say this or not. I'm almost very, very cautious about what this is going to do, because everything's been teased out there and all the rest of it. But I still got a really panging sort of feeling that the market's going to go, because we've had so much difficulty over it felt like decades to get to 7,000 on the FTSE, and then all of a sudden we made it to 8. Well, not all of a sudden, we then made it to 8, and then for some obscure reason, despite all the noise, all the chaos, all the mayhem, all the negativity, year to date we hit, what was it, 9,899 yesterday, the 11th of November, an all-time record, folks. And I was saying X amount of pods ago, FTSE 10,000, is it possible? And if we get there before the 26th of November, I have an awful feeling that would be the peak for the year. So I'm almost getting ready to just take quite a considerable amount off the table, because I always keep a little bit of a cushion of cash, but I might have to build up a bit more just in case, mate.
Well, it makes you wonder. I mean, you look at Warren Buffett over at Berkshire Hathaway, and the cash pile just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it is now hundreds of billions of dollars. He's been a net seller of shares now for 6 quarters or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
You know,
I think the last time I looked, it was, I'll get this figure wrong, but I think it was 355 billion in cash, maybe 375. And we'll find out. Somebody will give us a correct number on that. But he's sitting and waiting. But he's also saying, I think some of that cash he's sitting there waiting with is also about the fact he's going, actually, I'm not going to be running the business anymore. I'm going to hand it over to my
Greg Abel, to the next person. That's what his name is.
I forgot his figure's name. Apologies. So that's potentially a consideration. So you go and manage that now. I'm giving you a lot of responsibility here, you know, regarding assets. This is how much of cash. Go and find what you want to find, mate. You do what you need to do. So there could be that element. One thing I wanted to mention, I've got to give a big shout out. It was my first Money Week event I went to on Friday the 7th, and it was the Money Week Wealth Summit at the Conveen building. Conveen, is it Conveen or Conveen? Conveen,
not sure.
Building at Aldersgate last Friday, and it was brilliant. Really, really enjoyed it. Got to meet Andrew Van Sickle, who's the editor, current editor. I hope I pronounced his name right. Got to see John Stepek again. He was absolutely brilliant as well. He was on Henry folding off his chair now. He's lowering his chair as we speak.
That was meant to go in the other direction.
He's now shortened himself into the, on the screen.
I was going to say, however, manage that. I was trying
to go up or down,
way.
Henry.
There we go.
Pulling on your braces does not help, folks. He's pulling on his braces instead of his chair.
Oh.
Right. So John Steppett was on stage with Laura Fall. As you know, Lord of Benches, absolutely brilliant, Laura Fall. They had a really good chat. And I got to see Marion Somerset Webb talk about 25 years of the Money Week magazine. And she was excellent. And Pippa Mulgrem. Have you heard of Pippa Mulgrem? She's worked with presidents, US presidents. And mate, she just went around and did a 360 degree run about all things tech and AI and tokenization and crypto and the US government and space and helium 3. And I came out, I was going, wow, there is so much going on. And we in the UK are almost oblivious to it. Almost oblivious to it, Henry. We see a little bit about the currency wars. We see a little bit about the trade wars. We see a little bit about the tariffs. What's going on with China? You know, the negotiations. And I think most of it's, we're in the dark.
Yeah.
You really, really don't know what's going on until you hear some of these that are actually in and amongst it in America. We're getting the little bit of the crumbs, mate, and what the media
wants.
Well,
this is the thing. I mean, the talking points that you see, where do you get most of your market commentary from? The press. By the time it's hit, most of us don't have a Bloomberg subscription. So I'll start with there. Bloomberg News Service is fantastic. It's a market leading financial services news reporting service that breaks some of the watch. The Bloomberg podcasts, they're fantastic. Mm. They've got their own YouTube channel with some great documentaries on. But these things are usually produced months after they have become a major issue in the world economy. They're not happening before they're a major issue. They're happening after. They're reporting on real current events. So how are you as an investor supposed to respond to the things that are happening that are going to affect you 6 months down the line if you're listening to things that happened 6 months ago?
Yeah, and this is the thing, mate. This is the thing. You've got to be very careful about where you're getting your primary source of news from, or your primary source of research regarding all matters, really.
Well, the world changes so fast. I mean, there's a story going around at the moment around private credit, and we touched on this a little bit. Mm. And there's been a new flavor of it popping up in the Financial Times, which is around how much insurers have put in private credit funds. They now reckon that it's, I forget the exact figure, I'm going to say 2.5 trillion. It's certainly something trillion pounds worth of exposure to the global private credit market. And there are alarm bells ringing because nobody knows what the value of these private credit funds actually is. They're totally illiquid in a lot of cases. And now you've got a huge industry, a pillar of the financial community, the insurance industry, which is packed to the gills with this stuff. Who knows where that's going to end up? But the point I'm making is that it's already happened. It's already being done. That stuff is already in the insurer's balance sheets. Now you're just hoping a bond doesn't go off with it.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. And then there's this other thing regarding balance sheet depreciation of assets. Have you heard that story regarding what's happening? I think it's Amazon, Meta, and a few others as question marks, whereas before they're allowing assets to depreciate over 4 years or 3 years, they pushed it out to keep the value of them on the books.
Oh.
Yes, to 5 years, and in some case, 6 years. So that's going to come back and bite some of the tech firms that have been doing that. So I'm watching my fingers on that one. So yeah, there's loads of things spicy going on, mate. So everyone's worried about Rachel Reeves and what she might say on the 26th of November. There's some others out there, mate, But the market just seems to be climbing a wall of worry. I remember when X amount of months ago, Henry, when the FTSE first hit, FTSE 100 hit 9,000. And I saw people coming out the work going, that's it. I'm short in the FTSE 100. Short in the FTSE 100. Some people started at 8,500. It's not going to nine. I'm short in the FTSE 100. And here we are. I think today, would we finish? I don't know if it was 9,98 or something like that. No, we were flat there or thereabouts. I didn't see it before we started. But we're literally at 8,000, sorry, 9,900-ish. And tomorrow we could get some good news. The FTSE 100 could hit 10. We could actually literally hit 10 before Rachel Reeves speaks.
Yeah.
And if she comes out and all the noise that people have created and said that you're going to tax us here, I've got rid of my portfolio, I've gone to cash, da 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 da. Do I have to buy the market higher? I might have to buy some stuff higher because I'm going to reduce my exposure to the market a little bit. But let me just touch on this, Henry, because this is what Gavin Lumsden posted out this morning. And this is what he wrote on X. Nearly 7.3 billion withdrawn from equity funds by UK-based investors since July. July, August, September, October. 4 months, because they're not counting November. Yeah. The largest 4 month outflow ever recorded, says Galastone Limited. Investors took out 1.2 billion from UK focus fund funds in October, taking the total 12-month outflow to 10.4 billion. Some of that's panic, some of that's fear, some of that's pensions. People, oh, they're just going to attack the pensions again. She's going to come and tax us here. And yet, still, all those funds withdrawal. The FTSE hit a record yesterday.
But this brings us quite nicely onto our theme of the show,
Yep. The
unloved
theme of the show.
shares, because the UK market is absolutely packed to the gills with companies trading at depressed valuations compared to global peers because of these sorts of wild swings. And I think it's often due to apathy almost, more than actual disaster. I mean, there's so much negativity around the UK economy, around Brexit, around tax, around Rachel Reeves, around unemployment. Unemployment's just hit 5%. It's just woe, woe, woe. And yet you go and look at America, and it seems like people will pay any price for companies. And,
Oh,
as I said to you, Tom,
hold one, Henry.
go on.
When you throw that word, they will pay any price. The joke is on them, because we've had all our concerns about property and mortgages and all the rest of it, and now they're coming out saying, "Oh, you know what? You can have a 15-year car loan." How rapid do cars depreciate in value, and how rapid do they actually depreciate in naturally rusting away on your drive? Yeah,
Yep.
we can better that, Henry. Right? You could have a 50-year mortgage, Henry.
Yep.
So that 400K property that you purchase on a 30-year mortgage, that would cost you an extra 250, say, K to buy, will now cost you a million after you've finished all the payments after 50 years.
Yep. Yep.
Really?
It is. It
The
is. It
banks must
wealth.
be rubbing their hands together, mate, if someone's signing up for a 50-year mortgage.
It's
They're
wealth
not got it that good,
destruction
mate, honestly, in America.
on a vast scale. I mean, I looked at this when we took out our mortgage, and you go, well, the property's worth, say, 250. By the time I've paid my mortgage, it'll be 400 that I pay. Now, do I think this property will be worth, say, 400 in 20 years' time? I don't necessarily need it to be, but I needed to keep pace with the curve. So over time, this thing's supposed to be getting more and more valuable. If this property doesn't appreciate at the same rate as that curve, the interest curve that you are paying, you're losing money over your lifetime with every mortgage payment
Absolutely.
you make. And the
Absolutely.
steeper you make that curve, the less likely it is that you will keep up. And in 20 years' time, you'll be trying to sell a house at 700,000 that you bought at 300. and wondering why you can only get 500 for it.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, that's what's going on in America, mate. You
Yeah.
know, 50-year mortgage, mate.
But
What's going
I
on?
think it's that greed element. And the UK, I mean, we've not got the tech glamour, right? We don't have an Amazon, we don't have a Google, we don't have an Nvidia. You've got shrinking institutional ownership. So pension funds own less of the UK. The big asset allocators own less of the UK. The government has actually made it less likely for you to own UK equities and more likely to own UK bonds if you are a pension fund because of liability matching. Now, that's created inefficiencies in the market. A pound is a pound, no matter where you earn it in the world. And that's an opportunity for patient, fundamental, focused investors. You know, my inclination is as a valuer. I like to find value. I'd rather get a pound for 50p than pay £1.50 for it and hope that it grows in value over time. And, you know, in investing, I think it's better to be approximately right. So maybe you buy a pound for 50p and you sell it for 75, than to be precisely wrong but popular. So buying the thing for a pound, convinced that one day you'll sell it for £1.50 and getting nowhere near that for it in the end. But everybody telling you you're a genius because it's the next hot thing.
Yeah, mate, listen. For me, Henry, and I've often been slated for this, when I put out my little, credit note as to what I've purchased, and I've said previously, oh, I'm looking for £1 of assets, as you said. And I want to buy it for 60 pence or 70 pence. That's after a lot of research, and that's if I've got my sums right. And then still, the market and the company is going to decide what it values itself at and what it's willing to accept if some predator comes along to purchase it. So my math means nothing, but I'm looking for a margin of safety.
Yeah.
And there's a brilliant book by Seth Klarman by the said name. Margin of safety, risk averse value investing strategies for the thoughtful investor. Right? You're
Yeah.
trying to get as much margin of safety as you possibly can. So, irrespective of what happens with the market, you know that the valuation of the stock is just about there. Yeah. Stock's there, market's pricing it there, you've got a margin of safety. And if you can, there's a potential catalyst coming around the corner. Are you with me? We're always looking for something
Yeah.
that's going to happen around the corner. Had lots of people talking about, I'm going to talk about a particular stock a bit later on. But this week, apparently, they've had some good news and the shares popped. I'm going to talk about that stock in a minute. And just to give you guys a clue and a heads up, it's a stock that Henry likes, but only on a drinking basis when we go out. That's a clue, right? So I'll talk about that stock in a little while. But I'm going to give you another quote here, Henry. And this is from Stanley Druckenmiller, right? Famous investor here. And he's got a different view on contrarian investing. And he's basically saying it's overrated. Okay. So you going down that road that I go down to try and find yourself a bargain, looking in the one of the 50, one of the things I do is I look at where the 52-week lows are or the losers of the day. And I'm thinking, I wonder what's caused that to happen. And I start having a little look around those stocks that are unloved, and that's where I do a lot of my research from. And this is what he says, Henry. This is quite, counter to what I've always thought. Contrarian investing is way overrated. It is intellectual, cool to not be with the crowd, but the crowd makes money 80% of the time. They kill themselves at the turns. And losing as much as they would make 80% of the time. But I have found contrarian thinking, just to be contrarian, can be a death trap, in particular with bonds and currencies. We're not going to talk about bonds and currencies because economic fundamentals is what they are. It can be a rough ride if it is crowded. So if you're a contrarian investor in the wrong element or the wrong stock or the wrong assets, and it's a crowded one, and everyone's thinking the same thing, it could just end up going further and further and further down. And as the selling accelerates, the share price decline accelerates. So you could just be on an absolute, yeah, spanking.
But this is the thing, and this is something that I think a lot of investors would listen to us talking about this and get wrong. So you talk about buying a pound for 50p. So what's the first thing you go and do? You log into Shareskope.
Shareskope.
And you go price to net to a price to net asset value of less than a pound. Right? Give me the list of names. And you get a list of 30 names. Great. They're all a pound for less than a pound. The only problem with
most of them will be funds and investment trusts, though, to get clinical thing. You won't get that for a lot of listed companies, Henry.
You get a fair few, because I did this
exercise
earlier.
You get
more than you could feasibly buy.
Yeah.
Right? Now, the next problem that you've got with this, right? Not every price to net asset value discount is actually a bargain. And not every low PE, price to earnings ratio, is a bargain either. Sometimes these things are lowly rated because they are terribly run businesses.
Yes, we picked a few of them.
This is the thing. So you go and buy this thing, looking at, I'm getting a pound for 50p. The problem is that income's declined for the last 5 years. Earnings have declined for the last 5 years. The profit margin has declined for the last 5 years. The market is shrinking. The competitors are overtaking them. Their cash flow is shrinking, or they're not generating any cash. It's all paper profits. This is permanent structural decline, guys. So you go buy this thing for a pound, or you go buy a pound for 50p. Next year, it's worth 90p. The year after, it's worth 80p. And guess what? You're not still going to get 50p for it when it's only worth 70. The market will discount it further. Suddenly, you'll find that your 80p is only worth 25.
Absolutely.
So now, not only are you sat on a loss in real terms, i.e. the value's gone down, but the actual value of the business has shrunk as well. It is less valuable than it was when you bought it. And so if you're going to go looking for these unloved gems in the UK market, and the market's packed full of cheap companies trading at a discount to peers, just ask yourself the question, is the business misunderstood, or is it actually fundamentally broken?
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Absolutely brilliantly said, Henry. I think you covered the permanent structural decline bit and all the reasons why you need to be careful. Absolutely brilliantly. And this first stock I'm going to talk about absolutely fits into that category.
Well,
some people who have just recently bought it will say no. But this is about, I'm trying to look for some quality that potentially has a re-rating value and some catalyst going forward.
So this is that is my counterpoint to that. It might be in structural decline, but if something is going to change to reverse that, you've got a thesis.
Caveat that with a little asterisk on it. We don't know whether this will be a catalyst or whether or not they will turn it around. Because this ship, I said SHIP there, people, company, has been on the down low for almost 5 years now, right? So, Henry, and in everyone listening around the world, the stock I'm talking about is a stock that's got over 200 brands connected with it globally. The stock I'm talking about has historically done fantastic advertisements going back to the 90s or early 2000, where it was horses galloping through the water. Yeah. And it says, wait. That's what he does. He waits. And it's a surfer coming on, surfer dude coming on. Any more clues needed? I'm talking about Diageo, folks. Diageo. Market cap 41.2 billion. A P of 23, a yield of 4.1%, and it's been in decline for 5 years odd. Yeah. Talking about a share not so long ago, 3 years ago, that was £40 per share. It's currently sitting sub 20. On Thursday, the 6th of November, the shares hit six, I think it was £16.66, maybe there or thereabouts. So close the week out at a 10 plus year low. Yeah. There or thereabouts, Henry. And people have been buying this since it was 20 quid, saying it's undervalued, it's undervalued, it's undervalued. People have been buying it, buying it, buying it. And I'm going, no, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for a catalyst. I'm waiting for a catalyst. I've not seen a catalyst yet. There's this and that going to happen. This is that. I'm waiting. And on Thursday of last week, it went sub £17, 16 and a half quid, there or thereabouts. On Monday, it got what could be the beginning of a catalyst. What was the catalyst? And I'll read this news for you. Diageo has appointed the former Tesco CEO, Sir David Lewis, as its new chief executive to steer the company through challenging trading conditions whilst its share performance shows modest gains amid market pressures. So, Diageo, the global spirits company behind Guinness and Johnnie Walker and loads of other brands, he's going to assume the role of CEO on January the 1st. But straight away with that news, everybody went, oh, fantastic news. We need to have him. Blah, 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 blah. And why are they so thrilled about it? This chap's name, Sir Dave, his nickname is Drastic Dave, right? For his prior turnaround work at Tesco's and Unilever, he's a turnaround specialist, which is why the markets went, this is the chap that we need to revitalize Diageo's performance. Weaker sales, declining share price, blah, blah, blah. So the company's saying he's got proven leadership experience with consumer brands and strategic experience and key qualifications to navigate the current markets. It's going to be paid 1.5 million, which is no small change, really, and £210,000 a year in compensation contributions and performance-related bonuses. Not quite the the 1 trillion pay package that Elon Musk is going to get if he hits all of his targets. But the share price jumped from what was sub £17 to close today. It bounced yesterday, bounced today. Sorry, it bounced Monday, bounced Tuesday, and it's relatively flat today. Like £18.55. So essentially, it's gone up 10 plus percent since that news, there or thereabouts. Yeah, so 13 year low it was on Thursday. 1664 was the price, if I said something different earlier. And its high, 52 week high, was £26.19, and it's 18.55 now. It's got a lot of work to do. They're very positive regarding Dave Lewis's, Sir Dave Lewis's appointment, going up 7% ish there or thereabouts on Monday, went up again on Tuesday, flat ish today. My thing with this particular stock, Henry, and I've been keeping an eye on this because I've got my eye on it to purchase it myself. I didn't buy it on Thursday or Friday. I didn't buy it Monday because I was like, argh, I missed the bounce, and I'm still waiting to see if some of that dissipates back. But it's next year. I'm looking at it for next year. And I'm talking to people about it for next year. So Dave Lewis doesn't arrive until the 1st of January. I'm sure there'll be some maneuverings in the background. I suspect the divestments that they need to put in place won't happen until he started. Yeah. And that could be the catalyst for the share price boost. Two catalysts that I see coming up. And that's a stake in, believe it or not, in a cricket club company via Royal Challengers Sports. And if that goes up for sale, that could be betwixt 1.5 and about 2 billion. Doesn't sound a lot, but who would mind adding, you know, $2 billion into the coffers, right? Then you've got the Moët Hennessy stake as well as a brand to sell. If they were to sell that, I'm not sure what the valuation is on that. That could reduce their debts a little bit. And the concerning point, Henry, here, and this will be you going, yeah, Pete, I don't think I'm going to be buying that just now. I'd rather drink it over Christmas. Is the fact that Diageo's debts, Henry, are still around and have got it in euros, 21 billion ish, give or take $21 billion in debt. Yeah, for a company with a market cap of $41 billion. So a lot of debt there. So they've got to reduce that somehow. And they've also got to compete, because they're probably the worst debt-wise against their peers. So a lot is David. Drastic Dave has got a big job on, mate, starting on the 1st of January.
He does.
But it's loved. It's loved, hasn't he?
We talked about Diageo a couple of episodes back, might even have been the last one. And
yeah,
it's got some great brands, right? So in theory, yes, this falls into the category of unloved gem. But around a third of their revenue, as I understand it, comes from emerging markets. And last year, sales fell through the floor. Volumes were down over 20% in some countries.
Yep.
You know, you've got currency devaluation issues, weaker consumer confidence from high inflation. And these are all high margin markets, their emerging market sector. So volume loss directly impacts their ability to generate profits. So they've overexpanded in regions that are now going into. You've then got issues with premiumization. So in a world where prices are going up 10, 15% a year, you can't, you know, 15% on a pint of beer, you can afford to take that for a long time to come. 15% on a £50 bottle of champagne, that soon gets out of control.
Yeah.
You've then got weak organic growth. So their sales growth is flat, the margins are slipping, they've got input cost inflation, glass is going up, energy's going up, transport costs are going up. That's not stopping. And their valuation, because of this decline in revenue and profits, is still actually quite rich relative to peers. So even after, you know, they're down a huge amount from their peaks, but they still trade at around a, you know, 18, 19 forward times earnings. Versus the FTSE 100 average of 11, which makes me go, is this really an unloved gem, or is this just an expensive share that's got a little bit less expensive?
That's a very, very good point. That's a very good point. And I'm conscious that we talked about it on the last pod, actually, Henry, and we're talking about it again. For me, it's just one of them. It's a contradiction, isn't it, really? It's been so unloved, but everyone's chomping at the bit now and going, right, the bottom is in. Yeah, lots of people been catching knives and since it was 20 quid all the way down to 16.5 quid, and I'm almost thinking if this Sir Dave can come in and do what he needs to do, it's a possibility of a turnaround story, and it could be a turnaround story for 2026 if he does what he needs to do. I don't own the stock yet. I have got my eye on it. I'm waiting to see how this sits between 20 quid and 16.5 between now and the 1st of January. And at some point, I might just have to go in, depending on what Rachel and others do between now and the new year, because there's lots of shenanigans going on, lots of dominoes that are being lined up, which could end up falling against the market. But yeah, I think it's an interesting company. And I've got my guilty pleasure. When I go out and I'm going to have a long night, I tend to start my night with some Guinness, and then I go onto the rooms after that. Not necessarily, you know, the Guinness is obviously the Diageo product, but some of the rooms might fluctuate and not be the Diageo products. But my guilty pleasure, Henry, and I know yours is Guinness, my guilty pleasure, mate, throughout the year, is Baileys. And I will sit there and have a little tot of Baileys. I mean, I'll just sit down, we're pondering, I think, you know what, let me just get a little glass of Baileys and a little bit. And I'll just stop and I'll say a little tot and I'll ponder and I'll just use it on a Sunday. I'll just sit and chill with a small little glass of Baileys. Is that a strange thing? I don't know why. I've always done it. Always done it.
Fair enough. We've all got our preferred, you know, a name that some of the older listeners might recognise. Stone's Ginger Wine. I've got a particular soft spot for Stone's Ginger Wine.
Is that theirs?
I don't know if it's theirs or someone else's, to be fair. But
Stone's Ginger Wine. Okay.
Yeah, big fan. Okay. I mean, I've got a feeling with this, and I might be being stung by some other areas I've watched this happen, but I've got a feeling it's on a PE of 18 now. I think it is just as likely to fall to a PE of 9 and then be an undervalued share as it is to go back up to 20.
Do you all think it could go to 10 quid ish?
Yeah.
Wow.
They've got some huge, because in a world where, I mean, if you're going to pay that kind of multiple for this business, 18, 19, you want to see growth. It's
Yes,
not
you do want to
growing.
see growth. You want to see growth.
You know, it is not growing, and there's not a huge amount that this new chap can do about inflation, cost price inflation, consumer confidence globally. That's all out of his control. And
Absolutely.
so he could end up stripping out costs internally and doing all sorts of interesting strategic moves just to stand still. And in a
Good
world
point.
where this was rated at 25 times earnings because it was growing, in a world where it no longer grows, that will continue to sell off.
Very, very good point, mate. Very good. Very, very, very good point.
So
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying that is
No, great.
definitely what's going to happen, by the way, because like you, I've not got a crystal ball, but I think it's a
None of
50-50
us have.
coin toss.
And I'm conscious as well that we did speak about it in the last pod and we spent a bit of time on it. Right, Henry, brilliant. Thank you for that. I'm going to just quickly mention a few names here that gave us some fab feedback for the last pod. I'm going to start with some of our listeners on the YouTube. If you're not on YouTube yet, you don't get to see Henry's braces, right? Or as some Americans would call them, suspenders, right? That sounds a bit more different in the UK. His red braces, mate. But our fantastic supporter on YouTube, one that tends to comment on most of the pods, is our good friend in Wales, Terry Vaughan. And he wrote an excellent podcast and a good discussion about anchoring bias. And I have not sold Vodafone due to an anchoring bias. And I believe in the growth in the Africa business and held Vodafone for years, being a very poor performer, but I've not got the courage to sell. Excellent discussion about Nvidia and other massive technology companies. But Sir John Templeton offers a great bit of investing wisdom, and be a lonely investor, buy companies that the majority of investors do not want. In other words, be a lonely sheep instead of following the herd. Love that. Henry spoke in an excellent manner about the S&P 500, and I totally agree with Henry. And I agree with Peter that limiting mistakes is important. And Buffett's principle is to reject a lot of investment ideas, so lessen the risk of making mistakes. And Peter made a great point of pride to prevent selling and fear of taking losses. A great podcast, and keep up the good work, gentlemen. Take care, gentlemen. From Terry. Thank you very
Such a
much,
lovely,
Terry.
such a lovely chap. Yes, I did eventually. Terry wrote to me on email as well. I did thankfully reply to him. I've not left him hanging another 2 weeks, but always a pleasure to hear from Terry.
Brilliant. And one from ProFang59 on YouTube. Many thanks, guys. Great discussion. I particularly like the idea that selling at a loss is actually presenting an investment opportunity in a different company with better prospects. Thank you, ProFang. And then we've got M. Lewis 11602. Love the discussion on selling. Great stuff, both. Thank you. Thank you very much there, M. Lewis. And then we had Trader Mark on X saying, good listen, Henry and Peter, and well done with the fundraising so far. Then we had Tench Blank, I think it's Grayling, isn't it? Grayling wrote, great episode and a fascinating insight into the psychology of selling. I definitely suffer from buying price anchoring. Thank you once again. And then we had Dividend Lover on X saying, great episode, really enjoyed the psychology of selling. A genuinely difficult area, unless there is a particular catalyst that often top slice and scale out to exit. I find it much more comfortable emotionally. I do a bit of top slicing, and I call it phasing to a profitable exit, you know, taking partial sort of profits on the way out. So I don't, you know, edge my bets sort of thing,
You
Henry.
could sell a get rich quick scheme with a name like that.
Yes, you could. And we always had a secret accountant who gave us a little bit of feedback saying, excellent episode about the psychology of investing. I suffer from buying price anchoring too. Also, the comparative advantage we have over institution is that we don't have to make decisions based on beating an index. Very good point that, Henry. I think possibly one of my favorite posts was the wonderful post we had from Dave 76. And Dave 76, I believe, was in I'm going to say this wrong, Dharamsala in India. And he was with His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, last week. And he posted a picture of him being blessed by the Dalai Lama. And he wrote, "Not a bad day, blessed by His Holiness, Dalai Lama in the morning, followed by listening to another great Twin Peaks Investing podcast in the afternoon." Now, we are not worthy of being left in the same sentence as the Dalai Lama, mate, but thank you ever so much. Thank you for the picture as well. Henry and I love having our listeners globally telling us where they're listening from, but also when they're on holidays or on their travels or, you know, vacays, taking a picture and telling us where they're listening. So if you're going anywhere between now and Christmas or during Christmas and you're listening to the pod, send me and Henry a little picky of where you are and put a little post on X and let us know. We'd love to see all that. So not bad at all, Henry, that feedback. Yeah,
spectacular. All I can say is I hope you told the Dalai Lama about the Twin Peaks Investing podcast.
I think he has better things to be thinking about globally, mate, than that.
I was going to say there may be some more pressing issues than the ramblings of two madmen in the UK.
Absolutely.
There was actually, I had another comment from our friend Pat.
Oh, Pat, okay.
Patchy on Twitter, who has been starting to look into potential catalysts for re-ratings.
Okay.
And so we were having a conversation around catalysts for re-ratings, which sort of fits in with today's episode, but sort of doesn't. So I think this might be a topic for a future episode.
Yeah. Definitely.
Because it's a fascinating topic, you know. I mean, Peter's here with his Toinkos on Diageo, hoping that the new CEO sorts it out.
Everyone else is hoping he sorts it out as well, Henry.
Well, or not. I mean, apparently there's so many people are selling, they're cratering the share price, so I think people are getting fed up. But definitely one for a future episode. But if you have got me on LinkedIn or Twitter or you followed the blog, please do write in. I do my best to reply. So does Peter. And it's always lovely to hear from you.
Absolutely. Before we move on to Henry Stark, I just want to say a big thank you to those that have made donations to Memphis. We're sitting currently at 4,441. And we have got literally 6 weeks to hit that 5K mark before we shut it down for this year. And Henry will find and nominate a charity. It's going to be his turn to choose one. So if you have within you, you've done well regarding the markets, or you're just feeling generous and you want to help a group of young disabled children be prepared, or young adults be prepared for gainful employment in 2026, please make a donation. Doesn't matter whether it's £2, £5 or £50. If you can make a donation, that'd be absolutely phenomenal. And we'll hit that 5,000 mark and then be able to donate to Memphis to do the fantastic piece of work that they are doing regarding disabled children. God, just my throat's bone dry and I haven't got a drink with me this evening. So yeah, if you can help us, that'd be fantastic. Henry, over to you, sir.
Mate, well...
I've given the page. Apologies, sorry. So if you want to make a donation, it is www.justgiving.com/page/Peter-Higgins. But that is the Memphis Just Giving page. Make a donation if you can. Everything will be greatly received and will do good works. Henry?
Yes, absolutely. In the spirit of going back to our unloved gems on the UK market, there's a name that most listeners will have heard of. I've got two names for you, which I'm going to rattle through in short order. The first is a company which many of you will have heard of. It's called 4imprint. The ticker is F-O-U-R. It's basically an online marketing distributor. We've talked about it before on the show. And this is having a really, really rough time at the moment, mainly because of tariff concerns. They sell a huge proportion of sales into the US. And of course, with Donald Trump going on about tariffs and supply chains seizing up around the world, there's huge fears, not unfounded, that revenue is going to drop and earnings are going to drop with it. And these shares have derated heavily over the last 12 months. But this is still a hugely profitable, very well-run, cash-generative business on net cash with a very, very high return on capital. You know, depending on when you look, it's 70 plus. I've seen as high as 77.7% in one piece of research recently. And it's not on a particularly demanding multiple for that kind of quality. It's on a forecast PE of about 12 times with a yield of 5%. Now, to me, this is the definition of an unloved gem. This is the kind of business that was on a PE of 20, 22 times and is now on a PE of half that. For no reason other than temporary market fears. The market fears that Donald Trump is going to collapse their trading ability, that he will be a permanent impact on the business that they will never recover from. Now, so far, they have proven to be fairly resilient. And one thing that I can assure listeners is that Donald Trump will not be a permanent feature of our futures forevermore. No politician will be a permanent feature of our futures forevermore. And so you have to ask yourself the question, are you responding to temporary fear, and noise, or are you looking at the long term? Because 4imprint has been around a very long time, many decades. It's a very well-run, high-quality business. And even if they can't sell into the US, there are plenty of other countries, plenty of other markets that they can sell into. And management will not just sit by and let the company collapse. They will pivot, they will adapt, and I believe they will continue to grow. So I think my first name is 4imprint. I think it's worth having. The second name that I wanted to mention.
Sorry,
Oh,
Andrew, can
sorry,
we
go on,
just make a
Peter.
comment about 4imprint? Sorry, because they came out with news yesterday. And the beauty of the news was that the share price had been declining, declining, unloved. Everyone's worried, as you said, about tariffs. And they came out and actually surprised the markets. And some would say what they'd done was downgraded their potential revenues for the past, couple of trading updates and gone, yeah, we're going to reduce, reduce, reduce. And as a consequence, the share price went down, went down, went down with the downgrades that they placed it amongst themselves. And then they came back and then said, projects full year revenue ahead.
Well,
And PB,
they, yeah, they.
profits before tax was 142 million above analyst forecast, although revenues was down, new customer orders was down. But basically surprised the market. And on was it yesterday at some point, the share price was up 18%. So the surprise the market. So you're right, all of that negativity was in the price. And suddenly now it's up 18%. And that curve, you can't use the word bowl on this podcast, that curvature of the share price could be the catalyst for it to continue higher, because it was down significantly, wasn't it, year to date?
Oh, hugely
So
down.
yeah.
I mean, let me have a quick look. The shares were trading at a little over £60 at the beginning of the year. They've been down under £30 as of a
Yeah, so
couple of weeks.
halved
They are now
essentially.
back up at 40.
So there you go. That's how quickly things can turn around once the catalyst comes. But this is what we're saying about being a contrarian, looking at some of the stocks that are unloved or nearer to 52-week lows or down 20% up year to date. Everything else that's doing well is up 20% plus ish. The ones that are doing badly, you're thinking, well, if they're not doing well in the bull market, surely they can't do well, when the market goes negatively. But it depends on the catalyst for every single individual company. And they've come out now and surprised the market. As Henry rightfully says, the turnaround is potentially starting for that company now. So yeah, from 30 up to 40 already in a heartbeat.
And I believe
Good,
that I
good
believe
shout.
that that momentum will continue. I mean, you look at the quality metrics, their return on capital employed has strengthened, 3-year average of 72%, currently 90%. Their cash return on capital employed has increased from 47% 3-year average to 62%. Their earnings margins have increased from 8% to 11%, and their free cash flow conversion has increased from 76% to 95%. This business is getting stronger, it is getting healthier. And whilst you've got to look forward at what you think is going to happen in the future, I would suggest that this is a very strong, very resilient business. And again, look at the flipping balance sheet here. They are highly cash generative. and have a cash balance of $124 million as of the end of last month. This is not a business that's being run on credit. This is a business that's being run on cash. And they can afford to invest tens of millions in new distribution facilities and new markets to pivot away from the US should they need to.
Okie dokie, mate. All good. Just going to steal this from X, and this is via a very good individual that's on X. Goes by the Twitter handle of Entrust TMF, at Entrust TMF, and he's put out a brokerage note here from Peel Hunt, which reads, "Room for outperformance at for Imprint after battling tariff concerns, improvements are now being made at Four Imprint," says Peel Hunt. "Analysts reiterated by her recommendations target of £53, Henry, onto promotional products printer, which was trading up at the time of when this was being written. The shares are still down nearly 30% year to date. And the broker said macro challenges still persist, but she's seeing improvements on multiple fronts." So there you go. £53 price target there for four imprint. Okay, mate. Do you want to put your second one out straight away? Go for that if you want to.
Yeah. Well, the second one. So UK, we've got energy prices through the roof. We've got a budget coming up that everybody thinks is going to destroy the economy. We've got unemployment up at 5%. We've got a broken relationship with Europe. We've got a lot of problems, basically. And that's meant that our industrial companies are being sold off at a terrific rate. Nobody wants to own them, because if you own them, you've got no customers. And even if you've got the customers, you can't afford to run at a profit because input costs are so high. And this has meant that a lot of our industrials are trading at really beaten up valuations. And so my second business is Morgan Advanced Materials. The ticket is MGAM. It's a £560 million market cap business that manufactures specialized materials, high temperature insulation projects to reduce energy consumption, electrical carbon linear and rotary transfer systems used for transferring electrical energy in motor and generator applications, seals and bearings, ceramic cores, electrical sensors, metal crucibles. You know, their customers are diverse. They serve the healthcare industry, the petrochemicals industry, the transportation industry. They've got clients in the electronics sector, the energy sector, security, defense. This is not some little niche business operating out of Peter's garage. This is a global industrial business that produces some truly specialized technologies, some truly specialized materials that will continue to be needed for many years to come. Now, it used to trade on a PE of 12. That's dropped to a PE of 9. The business does not want, market does not rate this business as highly as it used to. And I believe in a world where it is still profitable and a world where it has got unique IP and a large diverse customer base, you are now more likely than ever to have a foreign buyer sniffing around this that would come and snap up a $560 million business.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer: the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a company I like a lot, Henry, and I'm biased because of the levels of tech exposure that it's got. Yeah, and the high margin semiconductor space that it's involved in, the niche that sort of niche. And you're right. This is a company that could easily be priced at twice the market cap that it currently is. It's a case of the timing of what those catalysts are for their earnings, and some of those challenges, macro challenges, political challenges, tariff challenges, dissipating, and this could easily accelerate going forward. Or, as you say, unfortunately, it could easily be another company, the US, that a US peer goes, we'll just bolt that on, give them a 15, 25% premium and take it out, take it out of its misery. When we know full well that the market cap takeover price should be double what it currently is, it could get away with paying 15 to 30% more rather than 100% more whilst it's lowly valued. And we don't want that to happen. But
It's not the highest quality business you will ever see. I mean, the input cost pressures are very real for them. But it is still a profitable business and a
Well,
large
Emma, this
profit.
is one of when you started the conversation about MGAM, one of the things you said was about the costs and the pressures of it. We are in, unfortunately, and somebody showed me a graph recently, a table, sorry. If not the worst, it must be second worst for business energy costs. Never mind consumer energy costs, for our
Oh
house,
no,
our
we are
household.
the worst. We are the most expensive industrial energy costs per megawatt hour in the world.
Well, there you go. There you go. So if we're, I was saying Europe, but I may be wrong. But if that is that is so counterproductive for our businesses, is it any wonder that these engineering companies that have a high energy cost to actually deliver what they want to deliver and build what they want to deliver and manufacture? Is it any wonder that these companies are so lowly priced when they're going, we can't compete. We can't compete. Our margins are, a wafer thin. And you're bumping up the energy costs all the time. Then you're bumping up the cost of what we need to pay our employees. And then you're bumping up the national insurance. Give us a break. But yeah, it's a quality company, Henry. Historically, it's been because of the niche products that they've been in, and they're leading in certain spaces. So I have had my eye on it. I haven't purchased it ever. It's one of them companies I'm thinking, everyone else needs to get out of their way to actually deliver the goods. But yeah, that's a really, really good company. So we'll see. Again, newish chief executive going in there, Henry. Is it a he or a she, Henry? Do you
The
know?
CEO, I don't off the top of
Oh,
my
it's a
head.
no. It's a date. It's a. I've just found
Oh,
it.
it's
It's a
a gentleman, Damien Cavey.
Damien Cabey. So that gent has got his work cut out to reduce the CapEx and improve margins. And if he can do that, 2026 could be a good year if there's none of this more rates or reeves negativity in the way, and no house of cards from the Pandora's box which is Nvidia and all the rest of it. I've got to touch on the Nvidia bit because I put a tweet out, where are we now, Monday, regarding Nvidia, and SoftBank, if I remember rightly, was one of the early investors into Nvidia, Henry. You do know this, I think. And essentially,
They
in
sold early as
2019,
well.
SoftBank sold the shares and made, I think, 3 billion. The shares then rocketed all the way up until recently. And during that time, the period between when SoftBank had exited and re-entered, and he kept the same amount because at one stage he was the largest shareholder in what is a now 5 trillion, nearing a $5 trillion dollar company. He exited in 2019. He made a little bit of change on it, several billion, but missed out on what would have been 250 billion had he kept the same amount to the peak of 5,000 of 5 trillion. And he exited this week fully. You might have some actual exposure to some of the Nvidia ventures, but yeah, they exited, and I think there was a big difference between what they lost on the actual investment, Henry, from 2019, but he still made a chunk of change being one of the early investors in the company. Let me just find the details here, one second. So sold in 2019 the stake that he had for 3.6 billion, re-entered later on, but missed on 250 billion, and then sold the stake afterwards that he re-entered with this past couple of weeks, and sold that for 5.8 3 billion. And the reasoning is to put more money into OpenAI and other entities. So that's still that AI circle, virtuous circle going around. And who's NVIDIA invested loads of money in recently? OpenAI. So that virtuous circle still going on. At some point, as you rightly said, Henry, that music might stop. And I'm not sure, because the question mark that keeps popping up now, and happened at Money Week, actually, at the Money Week Summit on last Friday, was about AI, OpenAI, NVIDIA, so on and so forth. At some point, these multi-billion pound investments have to show a return, don't they? You've got to show that you've made that 50 billion investment and you've got a return of hopefully more than 50 billion. And I don't know. I don't know about how that is going to end, folks, but keep an eye on that circle. Right, Henry, I'm conscious of the time. And I've got one more stock I want to share, and then a couple of suggestions for people to go away and have a look at. What are we doing for time? What are we doing for time, mate? Let's have a look at here. Not doing too bad. 52. Let's keep this quick. Right. This one I'm choosing is one for the sports orientated individuals, the keep fit individuals, the people that are athletes, the people that like to wear sportswear, leisure wear, and so on and so forth. There are two companies in this bracket which are UK listed companies that are the predominant sort of go-to retailers. I know Henry's not a big fan of retailers other than Marks and Spencer's, Harrods, where Henry does his shopping. But I'm going to talk about one that Henry never goes in. Of course, Henry doesn't wear a tracksuit, folks. You might have gathered that. I'm not even sure, other than when he's going to the gym, he actually has ever been into this shop to purchase some leisure wear. I am talking about JD Sports. Henry, have you been into a JD Sports, young man? Other than when you're in Nottingham and you're at university? Yeah, he's looking to the
Even
sky,
then,
folks.
I've walked past one, I think. Does that count?
Right.
I've got,
So,
I'll tell
JD
you what I have
Sports.
got. I've got a Sports Direct mug, but they're a competitor. If
That,
that
they're the
gets me any
competitors. That's
bonus
Fra
points.
now known as Frasers. Yeah, they're the direct competitors. Yeah, so you have been into a sports shop. Right. Oh, sorry, you didn't say you'd gone into the sports shop to get the mug. Did you get the mug from somebody else?
No, I inherited it in my
You
student
inherited
house.
it. Right. So, JD Sports, 12-month price range is 61 pence to £1.20. The 61 pence was occurred in April. Current share price is near a 6-year low. It's at 82 and a quarter pence, which is down 27% year to date. The PE is 8.7, folks, for a retail company, and the yield is 1%. It's a tiny little 1%. It's been facing challenges left, right, and centre, including national insurance and paying employees and energy bills to keep the stores open, and also declining sales. People are actually wearing less sportswear. Not sure why. And the share price has declined, and it's been dropping for a couple of years now, and it's now sitting below that £1 sort of threshold. I'm talking about this quickly. What am I saying? Sales and profits to August reported a 2.5% decrease in comparable sales, with total revenue reaching 5.94 billion. So there's still a lot of sales going through the company, but the adjusted profits aren't matching that. You should be looking at a 10% on that, right? So 5.9 billion, you should be looking at 594 million, 1% even, of the profits coming in. And the last adjusted profits fell by 13.5% to 351 million. And they were saying there are affected by rising labor and property costs, as well as technology and cyber security costs. So why am I talking about this particular company right now? And I've mentioned this a couple of times. Next year, it's all about the 26, 2026, folks. Yeah. You've got a World Cup and you've got loads of other sporting events going on. And I suspect that JD Sports and other leisure wear companies could do well. They've been impacted by Nike sales slowing down, Adidas and Puma sales slowing down, and other sportswear companies are available. They're closing some of the stores because of restructuring. So there's 50 stores closed just globally that they're looking for. And despite that, they're looking for growth. Largest store they've got is the Manchester Trafford Centre store, which is opened earlier this year. So they're looking to get an anchor there. Well, it's a massive anchor because they've basically opened it this year. Currently operates in 421 branches across the UK. But it's a very, very challenging environment that they've got, Henry. But for me, it's another one of them lonely and unloved sort of companies, still generating a lot of revenue, not as profitably as it's been historically, needs a catalyst. Will the next year's World Cup and other sporting events help it? I don't know. But it's worth, I think, investigating it, have a look at what's going on regarding that particular company and see what you find regarding it. Henry, any thoughts, mate?
I am a little bit skeptical because I'm not a huge fan of retailers, but I like your idea about the World Cup. I will give you that. I think that has got a potential catalyst in it there in to have a better year next year. My only caveat to that would be that there's probably some very clever bots with some very powerful computers already forecasting what they think sales are going to be as a result of the World Cup. And I suspect it's already priced in. But
do you really? Oh,
yeah. And my
that's
only
interesting. I've not seen that.
Say,
I've not seen that research. Okay.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it won't be published. But Goldman Sachs, for example, have got a team of very clever people that sit around trading money for the bank, and they control a couple of hundred billion.
Yes.
And I suspect they are probably driving the price. I mean, not specifically Goldman Sachs, but Goldman Sachs type entities, BlackRock, Vanguard, probably driving the price far more than retail investors. And this comes back to, by the time you and I are thinking about the news for next year, have the institutions already priced the thing in?
Yeah, that's a good call. And again, they've got significant headwinds regarding debt. So they've got to keep trying to service that debt as well.
Exactly.
So not great regarding the balance sheet that they've got of debt. I'm conscious of the time, folks. So I'm just going to throw out some names here to help to say these are some other companies. I think Henry's got a couple as well that I think you guys and ladies and gents should go away and have a look at. One of them is Auto Trader. Is one that I would suggest people go and have a look at. And another one is Reckitt and Beckenizer, RKT. And I think you mentioned it briefly, Henry. Unilever, another one that's done okay-ish, but could do better. They've got a few divestments and catalysts that are potentially going to be coming through latter part of this year, next year as well. And then I think this company that I've wanted to mention this company for a little while, Henry, and I think you may have mentioned it previously, and it's a tiny little company. I think that it's called Franchise Brands. I'm not sure how recently we've mentioned it. Another tiny little company in comparison to large chips that we've mentioned previously that could be worth having a look and investigate further about. Okay? Any you want to suggest, Henry, for people to just go away and have a look at rather than just going through the research of?
Yeah, I mean, there's one I mentioned a while back called RHI Magnesita.
Yeah.
Big industrials business, yield of 6.3%, still got a good return on capital employed on a very untaxing PE of 6.5%. I have no position in it, but I still think it's an interesting business, and I would recommend listeners go and take a close look at it. One of the other names that has popped up is Tate and Lyle. It is perceived as quite a dull consumer staples type of business, but it's got quite high margin specialty ingredients. Now it's had some headwinds, it's had some troubles, but again, I've got a feeling that you compare the capabilities of Tate and Lyle to international peers, and then compare the valuation of those same peers, I think you'll find there's a bit of a gap developing. And finally, we have got Rightmove. So the company Rightmove published a trading update on Friday the 7th, and shares have fallen off a cliff. They were as high as £8 a share back in the middle of the year. They are now plummeting under, I think they hit 563 today. They are showing no signs of stopping. Basically on news that the company is investing heavily in AI. And I think, I do believe that shareholders are starting to go, oh Lord, oh Lord, oh no, please stop.
Oh dear.
But just as a, you know, talking about unloved gems, this is a business with a 312% return on capital employed figure. 312. That's got a lot of margin to chip away at. You know, if you think it's going to burn money investing in AI capabilities, it's got a lot of money to burn. So possibly want to go and have a look at. Possibly a bear trap ready to rip your arm off. But one for readers to go and take a peek at, or one for listeners to go and take a peek at.
Can I just add another one before we go, Henry? And this is one I think you've mentioned previously. I'm not sure when you mentioned it. But if there's talk that interest rates are going to come down, right, to try and help the markets, help properties and all the rest of it. Mortgage Advice Bureau.
MAB1.
Is it MAB1?
Yep.
I think that could be a good one to have a look at. You mentioned Rightmove. If the markets and interest rates come down, it might make the flow of property sales increase. So that could be another one. I'm not sure. I've not looked at it. I've just got the top of my head related to that one. What have you got anything in front of you there you can see?
I do.
What the price range is, how it's doing?
It's up about 20% year to date, 18%. Yeah. It is well off its all-time highs. Its all-time highs were about £15 back in 2021. It's currently trading at about 7.
It is
on a lower than average PE, 16.6, as opposed to a three-year average of 20. It is on a lower price to net asset value, a 5.7, as opposed to a three-year average of 10. It is growing its, or it's forecast to grow its turnover faster than its three-year average, and its earnings per share faster than its three-year average.
Right, okay.
So quite a lot to like there. It's got a return on capital employed of 25%. So good, healthy business there. Yeah. And again, this is something that I could easily see. It's only got a market cap of 400 million. I could easily see a bank coming along and snapping this up in a second.
Yeah, banks are naughty. Did you mention a yield on there, Henry? Did you just say a yield?
Yes, it's paying a 3% yield. 3% dividend.
Yield while you wait. Okay. Yeah, that's not too bad at all, mate. Not too bad at all. Right. I think we're done, Henry. Unless there's something else you want to add. We've got quite a lot of stocks there, folks. Covered a lot of stocks there. And just want to say a big thank you again to everybody that's given us feedback and reposted and commented on X, on LinkedIn as well, and also on YouTube and the other channels. Please do give us a like on YouTube and leave us your comment. We want to get that numbers of interactions up as best we possibly can. And if you're able to make a donation to Memphis, please do so. Thank you to everybody that's already made a donation. And I'm hoping I'm going to be catching up with a few of you. I've got a few visits into London. I'm in London tomorrow, which will be Thursday. And again, the following week and the week after that, I'm spending a lot of time in London. So I'm hoping to catch up with a couple of you guys, ladies and gents, over the next month or so, and hopefully catch up with you, Henry, as well. Hopefully when you come out, I may even buy you a belt so you can put a belt on rather than braces.
least I'm not holding my trousers up with a bit of string.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. No. Right, Henry, thank you again, sir. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you ever so much for your support and help with this pod and getting it off and across all the different social media bits and pieces that you do as well.
My
All
pleasure.
right, mate. Ladies and gents, take care. God bless. It's the 12th. You're going to get in this on the 14th. Not sure if you guys have started doing your Christmas shopping yet, but I've already started eating mince pies, Henry. That's my other. I've started already, mate. I saw them in Sainsbury's and I couldn't resist. I was like, I've got to do
I
this
need to.
thing for a couple of weeks to find out which the best. I blame it on the fact I've got to vet all the different mince pies so I get the ones that I want and stock up on them for Christmas and New Year. I've got to get the right ones, mate. So I've got to do look, these are all tasters for the minute. Yeah.
You know, that's taking your research, fetish just a little bit far.
Gotta have some nice mince pies, mate. Gotta have some nice mince pies. Right. Okay, that's it. That's a wrap, folks. Take care. God bless you, Henry. Thank you, sir. Ladies and
Pleasure.
gents, take care. Look after each other. Show kindness. And we'll catch up with you in 2 weeks' time. Bye bye for now.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.